Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and this podcast is sponsored by the Self Storage Private Money Summit coming up August 5th through the 7th in Dallas, Texas. We're going to peel back the curtain on how we successfully raise private capital to fund the growth of our portfolio in our new environment, which, as we all know, has benefited our industry greatly. Look, there has never been a better time to invest in self storage, and my team and I have been preparing for the opportunities that this market would provide the seasoned self storage investors, and that time is now. We have amassed a huge war chest of private equity partners since the last recession in order to be prepared for the next one, and you owe it yourself to do the same. If you're ready to go pro and give yourself all the funding you'll need to grow your portfolio, then you need to join me and my team in Dallas August 5th through the 7th for the only private money event focused 100% on self-storage from the team who has amassed over $160 million in assets. Early bird tickets are available right now by going to selfstorageinvesting.com/private money. That's selfstorageinvesting.com/private money to grab your discount tickets before the special promotion goes away and before we sell out. That's selfstorageinvesting.com/private money to get two tickets at the special early bird pricing. And I look forward to seeing you in Dallas. This is the Self Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and over the past 16 years, we have acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of my incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self Storage Podcast. With us today is Mike Zlotnick. Now, Mike is known in real estate circles as Big Mike due to his stature, but more importantly, he is known for his personal integrity and for having a keen understanding of the financial aspects of successful real estate investing. Mike has a depth of expert knowledge in the pandemic-created investment opportunities in real estate, along with what's hot and what's cold and where things are trending now. He and I got a chance to meet at a mastermind where we are both members. And last week, we discussed where we're heading in this market, not only what's hot and what's cold, but multiple ways of being able to structure deals, putting together the capital stack in today's economy, and also get an understanding of where we're heading into the rest of this year, as well as into next. So without further ado, enjoy our wide-ranging conversation with myself and Big Mike. Hey, Mike, good to see you again. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Great to see you. Thank you for having me.
Well, my pleasure. I'm glad we had a chance to be able to catch up. I know we saw each other at a mastermind recently, and thankful that we could carve out some time to get you on the podcast. And what I'd like to do is kind of continue our conversation. I've given the folks in the bio and the intro a little bit of information about you, but if you could, why don't you fill in the gaps and then get us up to speed as to what you're doing and what you're seeing in this market today?
Sure. I'll go back to the beginning of time. I come from Russia with love, like James Bond. Actually, I came to the States in 89 as a political refugee from the Soviet Union. That's kind of my origins. Lived here. I'm more of a U.S. U.S. citizen than anything back from the good old days of the Soviet Union. So live in Brooklyn, New York, married to my lovely wife, 21 years, 4 kids and a cat. So 5th child. Been reinvesting in real estate since 2000. I've been actually a active fund manager since 2009. Prior to real estate full-time, I had a career as a technology executive. Still love that field, but real estate has always been my passion. And I'm a fund manager. We invest, we're basically capital allocators, the best way to put it. So we invest in many sectors, including self-storage, which I really like. Multifamily, we do conversions of hotel to multifamily, some office, some shopping plazas, some land, some distressed debt, some performing debt, anything that makes great economic sense on a risk-adjusted basis. That's kind of the way to think about what I do. Mm-hmm. That's that's the summary.
So let's dive down a little bit, if you would, Mike. You've got a couple of different funds as well as other ways that you allocate that capital. So let's talk about your funds. And through that, I think people get a better understanding of multiple ways to go out and raise capital in the fashion that you're doing it.
Sure. So funds are very helpful as vehicles to aggregate capital and to diversify. So what are the primary benefits of these type of funds? Is the fact that every dollar invested from investors goes into a broad portfolio of diversified assets. You can write one check and get into immediately, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 strategies rather than deciding I'm putting in, one-tenth of the money in this strategy, one-tenth of the money in that strategy. It's very hard to do. If you're investing a very large amount of money, you can do that. But when you're writing medium-sized checks, sometimes the funds become a great entry point. And then we typically write bigger checks into deals and we aggregate capital and we're able to negotiate better terms whenever we work with operators. So the Tempo Growth Fund is our growth focus fund. That fund invests strictly in the growth projects. So value add, development, redevelopment, distressed debt, anything that makes sense. We also have, as a result of COVID, substantial portfolio in the hotel to multifamily conversions. That's been a pretty good sector to be in. During COVID, the prices have dropped quite a bit. We were able to get into a lot of great projects. We still are able to get some hotels just never were doing well before the pandemic, and now they never fully recovered either. So depending on location type of hotel, these opportunities continue to do well. Storage, again, your favorite sector. We love it. We continue to invest. We're doing both. We're doing some developments, redevelopments from old retail, and as well as some existing facilities that are just being undermanaged. We can acquire them at a great price. And just to be clear, again, I love working with guys like you. I'm not an operator. I'm a fund manager. I'm an allocator. So we pick and choose guys like you, and we invest the capital in the right projects for the right people. I mean, that's the whole thesis. It always starts with people, two, the projects, three, specific economics on a deal. And that's Tempo Growth. Tempo Opportunity is very similar, other than it's a mixed strategy of growth and income. So we're mixing number of projects that are income focused, such as hard money loans, some of the preferred equity, some of the performing multifamily projects with some light value add. So as a capital allocator, we get to choose kind of best of all worlds and decide where they fit in the portfolio. A growth deal fits into a growth fund, income deal fits into that. If something in between, we decide what do we do with it. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike, I'm fortunate that I have made the cut and we've been able to do business together. So let's talk for the folks that are out here that are looking to approach you, basically in the fashion that I have. We raise capital as well. Sometimes we've had some larger projects in which the capital raise may have gone a little slower, or they've been back to back, or a different type of project that we're bringing out to the market to our investors. And I've come to you and you said, yeah, well, that's a fit for our folks and or our fund, and we can raise the capital for that. So what does that look like in terms of, you know, people that are coming to you with a project? And let's focus just on the partner side, you know, the group, the individual, or the people that you're looking to partner with or do a joint venture with. You know, what are some of the boxes that need to be checked off in order for you to do business with them and tell them to lend capital or co-invest with them?
Sure. So the short answer to the question is, if I don't know who you are and there's no referral chain, save yourself time and save me the time. I'm going to push back because we only do business on relationship. So the 2 cents would be come to Scott, have a conversation with Scott. If you have a relationship with Scott, Scott could bring the deal to us. I mean, that's how I like to do deals. I don't like the deals that are just purely marketed from cold from the street, because we always start with a sponsor and operator. If there's no relationship to the sponsor or the operator, I just cannot invest. It takes too long to do the diligence. It's too hard. So I know you, if you have a deal and you feel very comfortable and you're putting a name behind the deal with a partner, that is more interesting to me that a brand new person says, hey, I heard you on a Scott's podcast. I got a storage deal, you know, in this town, and I'm looking for some capital. I just spare you your time, spare me the time. So we always start with the first is the person. How do we know them? Can we do due diligence, background check? What track record do you have? What deals have you done? If we can clear that, we feel that the person has a history, have a track record. They may be a little short in the capital because they have a lot of great deals, but the capital just hasn't cycled back. Then we're open to the conversation. Then we're looking at the deal itself. The deal has to be a great deal. It's not difficult to get average deals. A bunch of average deals you can overpay all day long. First question is, why is this a great deal? And you have to be able to explain that both in layman terms and show the math. So if it's a great deal, then we'll talk about the economics. What does it make sense? I mean, how much capital are you looking for? we can possibly raise you all the capital, or we can do a portion of it. Sometimes we write smaller checks. Sometimes we write a bigger checks. We're dealing in indie multifamily where we wrote $3 million check where we didn't want to keep $3 million, but we then sold off a piece to investors. So we could do both. We can front the money and then backfill, or if we don't like the deal, you know, it may be an okay or decent deal. Maybe we'll write, you know, $1 million check, $500,000 check, if it fits into our diversification strategy. But if we love the deal, we'll write a bigger check for sure.
Well, and as you say, there's an awful lot of average deals out there, and anybody can buy an average deal. But to me, I think there's a lack of safety in those. There's the higher the margin, the safer the deal. And I kind of start there. It has to be a stellar deal with tremendous upside to make sure that I'm going to get the returns that I need, not only for myself, but my investors, because anybody can go buy something as we call it off the shelf, you know, so anybody can find a retail self storage deal that you can just go pick up and overpay at the mall. You know, there's many prices or many facilities that are priced out there like that, but it takes some true, you know, looking under rocks to find just the right deal. And for us, that has, you know, a 2x return on it. That's almost our starting point to make sure that everybody gets paid. Otherwise, it's not even a safe deal. But so beyond that, we were talking before we hit the record button about some of the different types of structures that, you know, both of your funds are able to deploy capital in different ways. So some of what someone might call a little more creative, but I've come to you several times, Mike, to say, hey, I can't quite figure this out. I know there's a deal here, but, you know, help me with the capital stack and help me structure this so that it makes sense. So, you know, talk a little bit about some of the different types of structures. And primarily, I think we could probably start with, just looking at projects in which you're bifurcating in terms of the investors, those that are looking for wealth accumulation versus cash flow and yield. So give us a sense of some of the ways that you're able to raise capital and how you're able to structure these in a little different fashion than most of the folks out there.
Sure. Thank you, Scott. So we'll touch now on a very powerful concept. And we just got two deals done. Basically, the way we structured the deals is you have a standard structure where you have acquisition price, you have some value add. And then you have debt, so you get a mortgage. So let's use an example. Let me kind of pick on one deal, $27 million. It's a multifamily deal. So I'm just, you can apply the same concept to self-storage. $27 million acquisition. Then there is a construction budget, some value add. But on the equity side, you're getting about 70-75% loan to cost bank loan, and then your equity stack in that deal is a little over $8 million bucks, to make long story short. So one of the advanced structures we're using is we have investors who are using IRA. They're using non-IRA money that just don't need a lot of depreciation. So the world of investors is pretty much broken into two buckets. One bucket is passive investors who don't need a lot of depreciations. IRAs, non-IRAs that just need enough to cover the cash flow, if there is a cash flow. And then the other part of the world are your real estate professionals or people who are doing what is known as tax loss harvesting. They need the losses to offset gains on another sale. So basically, projects that give them outsized depreciation is what they're looking for. So what does it mean? It means one of the deals we use this structure. Basically, we had about 3/4 of the people who wanted to invest for cash flow. And they didn't need a lot of depreciation, and what 1/4 needed outsized depreciation. So they put up 25% of the money, and they got bigger depreciation chunk. So we switched 25% of the money. We're sort of in a Class B units. They got 75% of the depreciation, while the 75% of the money that were Class A units, they got 25% of the depreciation, which is enough to cover the cash flow. Now, when you make this switch, you can't just do it for free. IRS doesn't like that. Just, you know, let's just switch depreciation around. So the deal was structured where the cash flow seniority goes to Class A's. So in other words, we're giving up depreciation, but what do we get in return? In return, you get seniority of the cash flow. So the deal has 9 pref. So they get first 9%. And then the Class B's after that, they get second, the same 9%. On top of that, the return of capital seniority switched. So for Class A members, it's 75% seniority of the Class B. So in other words, the Class B people are behind the Class A on cash flow and the return of capital. When you do that, you improve the Class A. Why? Because they're now getting seniority of the cash flow and seniority on the return of capital to the higher degree. The Class Bs instead, they get the accelerated depreciation from the CoreSec study. And as a result, they get somewhere between 2-to-1 to 3-to-1, depending on the project, which is a huge ratio. For every 100,000 they put in, say they got 200,000 to 300,000 of depreciation in the first year. It's a very powerful idea. So that's what, and how does it help raise capital? Well, you serve two groups of people. Those who need depreciation got a lot of it, and those who don't need it got better set up on the cash flow front. So by doing this, and it's not easy to do, but it can be engineered, you essentially sweeten the deal for both parties. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And we have people that are asking about that all the time, because there are people that invest in particular deals that are looking for, they don't need the cash flow and they're looking for wealth appreciation. And so therefore they also don't need to have the, you know, that depreciation every year on the returns. And so, you know, we also have so we'll put them in different deals, but this way, within having all the capital in one place within your fund, being able to split that up, is that obviously achieves both. So that is the benefit of raising money, enough money to create and raise enough money in a fund to be able to do those types of projects versus the single asset, single entity syndications, which is more of what we do. So that is certainly one of the benefits of having a fund. And obviously you've got it down.
Yeah, let me just clarify that. So we did that on a single deal so far. Mm-hmm. We did it on two deals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
three deals to be mm-hmm. now going through. So we have history of doing this, mm-hmm. but we are going to implement that concept in the next fund. Mm-hmm. So the next fund we're going to do, growth fund specifically, will bifurcate that for mm-hmm. sure. Mm-hmm. Because people who need outside depreciation, they almost don't want to write the check unless you give it to them. And if you right. give, if you do, they'll write you a bigger check. Mm-hmm. And the reverse is true on the other side. So fund structure is coming. We've done so far individual deals. It's one of the other things I do. I coach, so I'm happy to coach folks. It's a paid gig. I'm not a cheap mm-hmm. date. So, but if folks need help, can certainly quickly look at their deal and help them structure the deal strategically, kind of magnifies the benefits to each group, which improves capital raising. I mean, the other key consideration is, why the hell are you doing all this? Mm-hmm. You can improve your capital raising, serving better each class of folks, Class A, Class B, mm-hmm. you wind up with generally higher demand for the deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about fund structure. And we've had these conversations in the past, you have two funds, and I want to focus primarily on the opportunity fund. Let's say that somebody is getting ready to create a fund right now to be opportunistic. They want to have the ability to put some money into deals that they're going to bring in-house and put in that fund. They may have some excess capital that is raised that they want to use for some transactional funding to earn some fees on. You know, can all that be run out of one fund? And do you have to structure the fund and let everybody know what that looks like and how you're going to invest before that's set up? Or do you just take all the money and do what you want with it and hope to get the best returns for your investors? Obviously, hypothetically speaking, but speak a little bit of that to Mike as to how specifically you set up a fund going into this that'll dictate how you're going to invest those funds once you begin to raise them.
Sure, Scott. So it's a great question. And we are launching a new fund called Tempo Income Fund. And one of the lessons learned of running Tempo Opportunity Fund, don't be focused on the word opportunity. It's just a name. So that fund is a growth and income fund. So mixing both growth and income strategies in a single fund has its complexities. And the lessons learned, I don't recommend mixing them. In other words, you're better off having two funds, a growth fund and an income fund, and separating the strategies. So you're always starting with what strategies you're going to do. If it's self-storage deals, are you doing the value-add/growth deals that have little cash flow from to start with, or you're doing deals where you're buying an existing facility and you're cash flowing 8% plus from day one, right? So if you're focusing on income deals, you need one structure. If you're focusing on growth deals, you need a different structure. So absolutely bifurcating strategies, I think it's easier to operate two vehicles. It meets investor objectives. when you mix it up, one observation that we've had in the Temple Opportunity Fund, growth projects create a yield drag on income projects. So the way to think about it, your growth projects, they're losing money on paper while they're going through value add until they stabilize and then they start generating income. And that reduces distributable income for the income project. So on average, you blended them together, and what you wind up with is something that may not be as exciting for income investors, nor as exciting for growth. So in between, now, if you're investing for growth and income, it's a good spot, but separating income and growth to start with will get you a good kind of easy to sell menu option. The second thing, obviously, we're looking in on a fund level time horizon. Investors investing for short-term or investing for long-term. Temple Opportunity Fund is an open-ended fund with ability to redeem after 2-year lock-in. It's attractive to some investors. On the other side, we like actually closed-ended funds. So instead of an open-ended fund like Temple Opportunity, the closed-ended funds, effectively all they do is you invest for the life of the fund. So it may not be as attractive to people who want out sooner, but on the other side, it is... it lets investors to benefit from every investment in the fund rather than go in for a little bit and then get out. So there are always pros and cons. None of these issues are trivial. It's just more of a, what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to build a vehicle where you acquire 5, 6, 7, 8 assets? Temple Growth Fund is trying to make 20 to 30 investments. Mm-hmm. So you get a finite amount and then you run them through the life cycle and then you sell them off. That's a little bit easier to do. It's your classic real estate funds. The open-ended funds, they never have an exit strategy. It's continuous mandate. It's a continuous, you know, buy, sell, reinvest. And over time, you get some new people in and get some people out. So it really depends on what a fund manager wants to do. One of the biggest complexities with an open-ended fund like Temple Opportunity Fund is what happens on a quarterly basis, because we have to mark all the assets, mark-to-market concept. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? It means if you're taking new money, and you're selling units, how do you make sure these units are sold at a fair price? The same is true for investors who are exiting the fund. And that's one of the major complexities with open-ended fund. So depending on what you're looking for, depending on what kind of pros and cons, the strategies are different. So personally, after doing enough of these, I gravitate to more closed-ended funds. These are easier and simpler. Mm-hmm. And but it's a little bit harder to sell to investors because you don't have a redemption capability, or at least no formal mechanism. So, and these, by the way, these vehicles, these private funds are designed to invest for long-term, not for short-term. Mm-hmm. So people who want to go in and out fast, this may not be the perfect mm-hmm. place for them.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the difference. We're looking at investors that they want to place their capital into a fund. They don't want to have to, you know, continue to monitor it. They don't want to have to manage it. They want to know that they understand that their returns are going to be right around a certain percentage, and they can set it and forget it, you know, like a mutual fund, except they like the fact that it's in real estate. Then you have investors that they like being in and out. So they like to have the flexibility of being able to exit and get a pop, you know, a nice back end bonus, and then get into the next project and, you know, have a little bit higher returns, because obviously those are higher risk. So how do you make it each of those attractive to, you know, the folks that are long-term? What are some of the assurances that you give them, and what makes it attractive to keep them into a fund and not go towards a transactional money, which is, 3 to 5 years? And then on that end, in those single asset, single entity syndications, you know, what do you do to entice those folks to invest with you because there is a little higher risk versus going into your fund? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, sure. So individual deals by nature present higher degree of risk. So if you look at the individual deal, you might get a higher pro forma than you'll get in the fund, for a simple reason that the fund diversifies and spreads the risk among many projects. If anything we learned from COVID is that a specific sector, a specific strategy could get hurt. And if you invest in a single project, you can have a given area that takes it on the chin. So single projects inherently have high degree of risk, diversified funds, and you have two versions of diversified funds. You have still single strategy fund, like a self-storage fund, which invests in a bunch of self-storage deals, versus a diversified fund like ours, which is broadly diversified, where we have multiple strategies. So give you an example. Temple Growth Fund return target is 12 to 18%. That's the target average on an annualized basis, but it's not all distributable in cash. It's a growth fund. So the way to think about it, you write a check 5 years later. Let's just say on average, for sake of the argument, you made 15% on your money. So you made 75% in 5 years and you exited. So from that perspective, your ride is a little bit smoother because you spread the risk between 20 to 30 assets in the fund. So you're taking lower level of risk. It's a little bit more predictable, but are you foregoing a little more upside? Maybe. You may have some deals with 20% IRR target, maybe 22%. So if you did invest in one deal and one deal worked out to be a home run, you made it like a bandit. But if the deal collapsed, you saved yourself the a lot of capital. So that's one of the key benefits in the fund. As I said, the other thing we do is because we write bigger checks, we can step on people's toes a little bit. You know, I've given you an example. We've invested, because we have fund of funds, we invested into other funds. And we come to another fund manager and say, hey, we'll give you $1 million or $2 million. We need a side letter. We need improved terms. We do it all the time. And a lot of people don't mind kind of adjusting their terms if they get a big check, and they get a check today and they get a check tomorrow. So from a risk perspective, the fund is definitely a safer vehicle. Now, as far as predictability, again, a growth fund itself will give you a target. It's 12 to, it's like a IRR target on a redevelopment deal, right? You get 20%, 18%. Is this every year? No, it's basically on exit. Similar thing happens in the fund. The waterfall protects the investors because we pay cumulative pref, then we return the capital, and then the split kicks in. And we have institutional level splits, 80-20 for Class A and 70-30. The bigger number obviously goes to investors. So structurally, we're designed to give investors the biggest upside. We diversify, we increase at the access point. On the other side, if you're looking for short term and you want to go in for into a couple of years and go out, we have, as I said, Tempo Opportunity Fund, which has a redemption mechanism after 2 year lock-in. And the target on that is 10 to 13. Why it's a lower target is because it's a mix of income and growth strategies. Typically, when you invest for growth, you're taking a higher degree of risk and you have higher return expectations. When you invest for income, especially more conservative investments, like first lien mortgages. We have a couple of deals we've invested with you as a loan, right? So as a loan, it's a lower risk because you're senior on a capital stack. That's why the target return is lower, but it's a more predictable, lower risk target return. So depending on what are you trying to do, different fund may serve different objectives. If you want a little more liquidity, you want a little more safety, you go in the opportunity fund. If you want growth, you go in the growth fund. It's just a different strokes for different folks.
So Mike, as we're heading into, I guess, the next phase of our economy, it looks like interest rates are going to remain low for a little while, but we do have inflation that is rearing its ugly head. Stock market is going to do what it always does, which is go up and down. It is a very unpredictable, just based upon what's on the nightly news, if you will. And so we have folks that go in and out, and then the folks that we're attracting are the folks that have just had it. They're tired of that, and so they're coming out of the stock market, the refugees, if you will, and they want to be able to put their money into a hard asset that produces income. And we want to be there to catch those folks as much as possible. So what are you seeing in the marketplace in terms of people coming in and out, and what is attracting them? I know right now there's a lot of uncertainty, and then so many of those folks are sitting on the sidelines. But if you would, briefly in the time that we have left here, what is the state of the private equity community right now? And what are you seeing in the marketplace in terms of where are those folks going? What are they looking for? Are they on the sidelines? Are they actively looking for deals, and what type? And the types of returns, give us an overall picture of the landscape as you see it right now.
Sure. So it's a great question. Inflation is sort of everybody's friend in real estate, right? That's the basic accelerating inflation, which is what we're observing, both commodity cost driven and wage inflation, right? Combination of the two creating a higher cost of reconstruction, redevelopment. So as a result of this, what we are seeing strategically, what has better risk-adjusted return are redevelopment projects versus ground-ups. As you know, there's a lot of ground-up construction, especially in the affordable housing, and that's absolutely fine. But we do like repositioning of assets. Like I mentioned, hotels to multifamily. In the storage arena, if you can reposition some kind of dysfunctional retail, which is not a new story, but a repositioning generally gets the asset to the market faster at a lower cost. So we like these type of projects. On the other side, and this was a great thesis during COVID, but it never really worked out, is to get into the distressed debt. So distressed properties are just few, you know, there were a few defines. It's just distress didn't happen. So what we're looking to invest into projects that have decent downside protection and decent upside. So we're not looking at the most aggressive part of the spectrum. The most aggressive part of the spectrum, I would say, is ground ups, taking the risk, speculating that 2-3 years down the road when this product is out there, you're still going to have a strong market. I would rather see projects, like you said, bigger spread, lower level of risk, well-understood risk, and realize some growth too, just not as aggressive, because the economy is running well, but we don't know when the music will stop. I mean, the craziness that's been happening from the fiscal policy, and it will slow down at some point. And when it does, we'll see, you know, some level of reduced inflation and some level of slowdown. Now, are we likely going to hit hyperinflation? You know, it's also a risk, just not a risk that I would have expected a year ago. So acceleration in inflation, in my view, is not necessarily temporary, but it's unsustainable to have inflation at this level unless the government continues to print obscene amount of money. So if the government will continue to basically solve all the problems by virtue of borrowing the money, expanding the Fed balance sheet, writing the checks, more subsidies, more money to everyone, that'll accelerate the inflation. If that aggressive expenditure slow down to some degree, at that point, the economy has to take care of itself. And without major stimulus, it will continue to struggle. So this inflation deflation tag of war will continue. But for us, we just want to see ability to pass higher rents. And even if cost of construction and or development or redevelopment increases, as long as ability to pass higher rents is out there, that is that's something that is just solid for all real estate investors. I do like multifamily, affordable multifamily, huge, you know, opportunity to market majorly underserved. Storage is an interesting sector. Just final thoughts. I would say what we like in storage are the projects that are sort of shielded and insulated from new ground up development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that one of the major risks of storage, somebody else just breaks the ground and puts another Class A facility within your, you know, 1, 3, and 5 mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
That is a risk. And if you can avoid that risk or reduce that risk, that creates some degree of safety. Mm-hmm. The primary problem with storage, you get a lot of supply, the rates come down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sensitive to that. So as much as possible, area with a protected new supply would make a big difference. The same is true for other sectors. Office is an interesting opportunity we're looking at, but we're very mindful of what COVID did to office, right? Mm-hmm. Repositioning office to multifamily seems to be a great trend. I've mm-hmm. heard of another interesting concept today, office repositioning into labs and some kind of other alternative uses. They seem to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But office itself, depending on the market, it could be in, you know, substantial long-term recession for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've just as quickly as we lost all the occupancy in office, we've seen a number of these being repositioned, not necessarily as co-working space, but as incubator space and also maker space. We're bringing some of those jobs back now, at least we began to. And so there is a need for some repurposing and different repositioning of these office buildings. And sooner than I would have expected, I think maybe most folks thought that the office buildings were going to go vacant for quite a while longer. And we're actually developing another, it's an industrial building, and we're building it into office, which is going to have a maker space and a co-working space, as well as a self-storage. And so adding two different uses that weren't even in the building previously. So there are opportunities, and as the economy is shifting and as COVID has really changed the landscape on how we buy things from a retail sector and the retail real estate, as well as office, and there's going to be a lot of settling for the next several years until everything shakes out to find out physically where everybody's going to be landing in terms of where they're working. But exciting times. There's always creating opportunities in the marketplace as a result of the changes in the economy. So, Mike, thanks for not only opening up other opportunities for folks to see ways to raise capital and how to move forward, but also the fact that you are a resource for folks to be able to go to. So if you would share the best way for people to get in touch with you and contact you to learn more about how to set this up. Because as you mentioned, if you're looking for capital, only by referral basis, but if somebody wants to reach out to you for some coaching, for some consulting, what's the best way to find you?
Sure. Easiest way to remember, bigmikefund.com. It's it's a cheesy name, but back to the CG Mastermind. CG brothers and sisters suggested that I start a podcast, Big Mike Fund. So my podcast is called Big Mike Fund, and the website is bigmikefund.com. And if you misspell it, you forget the D at the end, bigmikefund.com. I promise it's not a kinky site.
It'll get you there. You'll find them. Well, Mike, how about some parting words of wisdom for everybody out there who is getting ready to start this journey of taking it to the next level and raising capital, raising private equity to grow and scale their business? What would you have for folks?
Focus. It's one word. Mm-hmm. Stay focused. Know your target. Know what you're trying to do. A lot of people are just looking at a lot of opportunities and a lot of bright and shiny objects. Mm-hmm. So avoid bright and shiny objects. Mm-hmm. Determine what you want. Build your goals, and then build your plan, and then go towards the plan. So avoid bright and shiny objects. And as a fund manager, I do this all the time. There are always interesting and exciting opportunities. Somebody else is doing something else that feels great. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's another crypto thing. It's another. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have the conversations with my good friends, mutual friend, Corey Boatwright, another guys we know really well. Mm-hmm. And I tell him, I love and respect you guys, but I'm staying within my lane. Stay on target. Yep. Stay on target. Determine what the target is and stay on target.
Yep, I agree 100%. And I think it's one of those things you learn after several years of self-awareness in business as well, to stay in your lane and stay focused on your target. So, Mike, once again, appreciate your time, and looking forward to presenting and bringing some more projects in front of you, and also having you back here on the podcast, and as always, seeing you at one of our masterminds. So, Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I would love to have you back. Come back on the Big Mike Fund podcast. We'll talk some more about the latest in self-storage real estate.
Love to. Done deal. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Hey gang, wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the follow and subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.